It is a season of discontent, a time of bitterness, skepticism, and arguing. Now, that may sound familiar. In fact, it may sound like 2020 and our experience together of the pandemic and all the things that seem to be going wrong with this crazy year of 2020. But in fact, the three words that I just used are the words that flow through these chapters in Exodus that culminate in this 17th chapter that is our passage for today. The words bitterness, skepticism, and arguing. The Hebrew words we can call them the three M's of whining. It is mara, the Hebrew word for bitterness. It is mana, the Hebrew word for what is it, or it's, and we can say it's skepticism in the sense that the context for this word from last week's sermon and last week's passage from Exodus chapter 16, it was what is it, as in the manna that we think of as the bread from heaven that was God's gift. But in fact, the question that the people are asking, what is it, really echoes sort of a skeptical attitude of, what is it now? What is this? What's going on now? It's almost our kind of attitude of 2020 of what else can go wrong. So there is mara, bitterness. There is mana, what is it, or skepticism. And it is meriba, arguing. This chapter of the 17th chapter of Exodus is this experience that you heard read just a moment ago, recalling this journey where repeatedly God has intervened and created these miraculous moments of providential timing, where in the case of the children coming out of Egypt, there is liberation. In the case of moving through the Red Sea when they had been trapped and there was this obstacle before them, God parted the Red Sea and there was, instead of a barrier, there was a breakthrough. There is movement into and in the direction of promise and into the land where now the people are free, but there's still a concern and there is this unknown and the uncertainty that kind of, again, echoes our own moments in this pandemic of what's going to happen tomorrow. The tendency in all of us to have these elements, these three M's, the mara, bitterness, the mana, what is it now, and the meriba, the arguing, the dissension, the division that we are so aware of in our current society. These were all very much evident in this congregation of Israel, these children of Israel, who are struggling mightily with uncertainty, the unknown, the wrestling of, do we want to keep going into this wilderness that we don't know exactly what tomorrow holds? We could go back to Egypt. If we're going to die, we might as well die under a palm tree instead of dying in a barren land. Moses, what have you done? So let's talk for a moment about this, what we can call a wine fest in the wilderness. Wine as in W-H-I-N-E. A wine fest in the wilderness. There is just this abundance of complaining, in spite of the fact that God had repeatedly intervened in their lives and proven worthy of their faith, and the next day is going to be okay because God holds that day in the hands of promise. There's going to be something good in the midst of the difficulty you're experiencing now. That's the underlying and overarching message of this Exodus journey, and yet it's difficult when you're in the middle of the wilderness to really believe it, especially when you're feeling bitter and skeptical and you're arguing with the people around you. This is the ongoing issue that we struggle with now and they struggled with then. So it behooves us to ask the question, how do we get out of this mess we're in? In other words, how do we move from whining to winning. This is part two of our two-part series, From Whining to Winning. And the wine fest in the wilderness that these children of Israel kept stumbling into is not so different than our own tendency to whine as opposed to win. Now, we said last week, there is just a very subtle difference between the way these two words are pronounced. And it all boils down to just the vowel in the middle of both words, to whine or to win. The pronunciation and the way we hear the words and the way we understand the meaning of the words all hinges on that one little vowel in the middle of both words, how you pronounce the I in whine and how you pronounce the I in win. Helps our brains understand the difference of those two perspectives, to whine or to win. Just like in the way we pronounce those words, we said last week, the perspective, the attitude we have and the perspective we have on life, sometimes it just hinges on a very subtle shift in our imaginations, a subtle shift in the way we view the world and the way we treat one another. So let's look today at the difference between whining and winning. And we can boil it down to simply one question. The question that a whiner asks is going to be different from a question that a winner asks. Now, first of all, let's acknowledge that right now in 2020, all of us are guilty of whining. It's not a bad thing to complain to the extent that there are times in life, let's face it, where we need to critique what's going on. There are times in life where it is fully appropriate to complain about, for example, wait a minute, what that person experienced is not right. That's not good. That's not fair. We need to stand up and speak our truth. We need to say what needs to be said. We need to tell the truth. And we need to critique something that is unjust or unfair. That's appropriate. We could call that complaining in the sense that we're saying that's not right and we've got to make a change. That's appropriate. We also need to acknowledge that all of us stumble into this whining capability, the potential for all of us to feel sorry for ourselves and to think, good grief, what can go wrong now? What else can happen? 2020, it seems like one thing after another has gone off the rails. And we're all just sort of baffled and we are struggling with the uncertainty of what's going to go wrong tomorrow. Is this all going to work out okay? We echo exactly the way those people in the wilderness of Sinai were feeling. And we will stumble into, if we're not intentional and careful, we will stumble into bitterness, skepticism, and arguing. You can feel it, you can see it, and it's all around us. So the question that a whiner will ask, and this is key, a question that a whiner will ask is, who can I blame for the problems? Who can I focus on and point at and say, it's your fault? Now, the whiner is not going to just say, this is wrong and it needs to change and let's work together to make it right. A whiner is going to just point the finger and say, who can I blame? Surely you're the problem. A friend of mine, a very good pastoral counselor, who just this week shared with me the fact that he grew up learning that when you point the finger at someone else, if you think about it, you're actually pointing three fingers back at yourself. So while we want to point to others and blame them, we need to take seriously the fact that we have something in us that is out of kilter too. The question the whiner is going to ask, who can I blame, is key in the comparison to the question a winner is going to ask. A winner is going to ask, instead of saying, who can I blame? The winner is going to say, what can I do to make this problem better? What can I do to help fix this issue? What can I do to make this work for the most number of people possible in a good and right and potentially redemptive way? The difference between a whiner, who can I blame for this, and a winner, what can I do about this, is huge. But it can happen with just a very subtle shift in our imaginations. It's like that little tiny vowel in the middle of to whine and to win. And the way we pronounce that makes all the difference in the way those words are heard and what those words end up meaning. In the same way, asking the question instead of saying, who can I blame, and simply saying, what can I do to help? One of the great winners in our own American history was a man by the name of Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass had every right to be a whiner. Born as an enslaved person to an enslaved woman, in a situation where he experienced the daily horrors of slavery, he had every right to whine. And yet, he was historically in our country what we all ought to agree was the epitome of a winner. Because he ended up, as he escaped from slavery on September the 3rd, 1838, was his day that he said his whole life was suddenly opened up before him and colors were brighter and the world was better because he escaped from Maryland over to Delaware and experienced the incredible liberation of freedom. Now, he could have just complained about what he'd experienced. That's what a whiner would do. But instead, Frederick Douglass, as a winner, set about his task for the next several decades, speaking about, teaching about, preaching about, first of all, the horrors of slavery, but also the benefits of how all people can work together to rid our country of this horror of owning other human beings and controlling the lives of other human beings. Repeatedly, Frederick Douglass helped people like Abraham Lincoln see in new ways and imagine with new possibilities. It was an incredible and is an incredible story, and I encourage you to research a little bit about Frederick Douglass and see the number of things that happened in his life that over and over again he could have just thrown up his hands and said, well, this is just terrible. Now, I need to blame somebody. Surely someone is at fault here and I want to blame them. But instead, as a winner in history, he repeatedly asked the question, now, what can I do to make a difference? What can I do to impact the lives of the people that I left behind who were enslaved and impact the people who here on the other side of the Mason-Dixon line need to hear the message of how they can help to redeem this terrible situation in the Deep South and in the slave-owning areas, even Maryland, where he escaped from, in those days was a slave state. The question, what can I do to help, surely is so much more powerful and beautiful than the question of who can I blame? Most people, let's face it, most people don't want to be whiners. Most of us don't want to be stuck in that repeated sense of mara, bitterness, and mana, skepticism, and mariba, arguing. For most of us, that is just not comfortable. It is kind of icky. It is creepy. It is negative. It is just, it holds us back and draws us down. And we don't like it and we don't want it. Most people I know don't want to be a whiner. Most everybody I know wants to be a winner. The question is, how can we help train our hearts and our minds and our spirits to move in that right direction? Like the children of Israel moving in the direction of promise, to do so with the stance and the perspective and the ongoing attitude of a winner. What can I do to help? Versus being a whiner. Who can I blame? This powerful moment of being able to just slightly shift our imaginations, to think ourselves into that potential of, I'm going to be a winner. What can I do to help? What can I do to make this problem better? How can I be used by God in this moment, in this time, to make a difference in a way that will really change things for the better? In Romans chapter 12, the Apostle Paul helps move us in that shift of imagination by helping that congregation that he was writing to in Rome realize the difference between simply putting something on the altar as a sacrifice, and said in this 12th chapter, make yourselves a living sacrifice. In the way he words it in this first verse of chapter 12, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, present yourselves as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God. This is your spiritual worship. In other words, if you want to be a winner, if you want to align yourself with God's hopes and dreams for us now, for the people Paul was writing to in Rome, for that whole congregation of Israel stuck in the whining fest, the wine fest of the wilderness in the Sinai Peninsula, if you want to shift that, make that subtle change, present yourselves as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God. This is your spiritual worship. Now, I love the vision created moving from Romans 12 to the 11th chapter of Hebrews, where this vision of this great cloud of witnesses surrounding us and cheering us on and looking for us and looking at us. In just a moment, our own Mike Hutchinson is going to sing a song that I commend you to listen to carefully, because it paints this picture of lives as living sacrifices, but this Hebrews 11 image of all those who've gone before us, but also those who are coming after us, to look at our lives and view our lives. And in fact, the way the words are posed in this song that Mike Hutchinson will be singing, may all those who come behind us find us faithful. May they see in our lives these living sacrifices, holy and acceptable unto God, winners in God's sight who made a difference, and ask the question, what can I do to help? How can God use me to redeem the difficulties of this situation? This vision of the congregation of those who've gone before us and those who come behind us, the next generation and the generation after that, seeing our lives as good and right and living sacrifices, for me is an amazing image, and it conjures the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona, the Summer Olympics, the 400-meter sprint that Derek Redmond was prepared to run. It was the semifinal meet of the 400 meters, and Derek Redmond was favored. In fact, in the semifinal, he already had clocked the fastest time in the 400 and was projected to win and get the gold medal in the 92 Barcelona Olympics. The gun went off, and Derek Redmond was easing his way into the front of this semifinal meet when all of a sudden he pulled up and had pulled his hamstring. Now, those of you that know about Olympic athletes know that for 3.5 to 4 years, Derek Redmond had been training to win this event, thinking about, dreaming of, imagining the gold medal and representing Great Britain, his country, in that 92 Barcelona Olympics. But he just pulled his hamstring and was lying in agony on the first turn of that Olympic track. He is being helped by some folks that had come out, some track attendants had come out to help him, and he pushes them away, and he gets up and he starts to try to finish the race. Everybody else has already crossed the finish line now, but Derek Redmond gets up and begins to limp painfully, step by step, trying to make it to the finish line. And people at this point had already seen the conclusion of the race, that everybody was walking away, but the crowd began to notice slowly that Derek Redmond was still making his way around the track. And that crowd of witnesses, 65,000 people there in Barcelona, began to clap and cheer him on. You can tell as the cameras focus in on him, the agony in his face, but his determination to finish that race, to make it to the finish line. And then out of the crowd comes a man who comes running up, and he grabs Derek Redmond. It turns out it's his father, who had been with him every step of the way, who had been helping him train, and who was sharing in the grief of his loss. And with Derek Redmond, his father was determined that he was going to help him cross that finish line. And as more of those 65,000 spectators in Barcelona began to see what was happening, more and more began to clap and cheer and egg them on. And the announcers, you can hear them start realizing what's happening. And they begin to say, listen to the crowd. Listen to the cheers. This is an amazing and very moving moment. And it's hard to watch that event. I challenge you, Google this experience. Derek Redmond, 92 Barcelona Olympics. It's hard to watch this without getting pretty emotional and realizing there's something about our lives that is reflected in that Olympic moment in 1992. The image that Hebrews 11 creates for us, the wilderness, this wine fest in the wilderness, and the tendency in all of us to just sit back and want to blame other people, and then to realize that there is this vast host, this great cloud of witnesses cheering us on, lifting us up, calling us forward to be presenting our lives as living sacrifices, living in this hopeful, redemptive moment, even in the midst of difficulties, of a pandemic, of a crazy year of 2020, and yet still called to be winners, not whiners, but people asking the question, how can God use me today? What can I do to make a difference? I've got something to give. Lord, give me the strength to be today a living sacrifice, presenting myself in your eyes, holy and acceptable to you. This is our spiritual worship. This is how we move from being whiners to winners. This is how God can use us today. May those who come behind us find us faithful. May we make a difference, and may we continue to ask, what can I do to help? What can I do to be used by God today to be a winner and to bring about God's hopes and dreams for right now and tomorrow and next week? Let us, brothers and sisters, together present our lives as living sacrifices, holy and acceptable unto God. This is our spiritual worship. This is our calling. And this is how we move from being whiners to winners. May it be so.